Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Phil Dierking, Kelly Jean Kelly, Dan Friedel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Marcia James will bring us this week's People in America report. But first, here is Phil Dierking.
The Trump administration has agreed to sell Nigeria up to 12 attack airplanes for its campaign against Boko Haram Islamic extremists. The sale will continue despite concerns over abuses committed by Nigeria's security forces, according to U.S. officials. The U.S. Congress is expected to be officially informed within weeks. The sale of the aircraft to Nigeria has a long history. The country has been trying to buy them since 2015. However, the Nigerian Air Force has been accused of bombing civilian targets at least three times in recent years. In one incident on January 17 this year, a fighter jet repeatedly bombed a camp at Ron, near the border with Cameroon. Civilians fleeing from Boko Haram were living there. Between 100 and 236 civilians and aid workers were killed, according to officials and community leaders' counts. The bombing at Ron occurred on the same day the Obama administration planned to notify Congress of the aircraft sale to Nigeria. However, due to the incident, the sale was immediately put on hold. In previous years, both the U.S. State Department and human rights groups have warned against the actions of the Nigerian military. The State Department said in 2016 that the Nigerian government has taken few steps to investigate or charge soldiers who commit violations. And in 2015, Amnesty International accused Nigeria's military of war crimes and crimes against humanity. The group accused Nigeria of the unauthorized killings of an estimated 8,000 Boko Haram suspects. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari promised to investigate the suspected abuses after he won office in 2015. However, no soldier has yet been charged. Nigeria's military has denied the allegations. Despite concerns about human rights abuses in the country, selling the aircraft to Nigeria helps the U.S. achieve some of its goals. The sale would improve the U.S. relationship with Nigeria, which is Africa's largest economy. The country is also in a strategic geographic position. The north of Nigeria sits on the edge of the Sahel, an area that bridges North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa. The Sahel has a desert-like climate and is not well governed. Experts warn that Islamic extremists like Boko Haram may expand their influence here. J. Peter Pham is Vice President of the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C., and the head of its Africa Center. FAM says that no country in Africa is more important for American interests than Nigeria. The aircraft deal also supports Trump's political goals. The U.S. president has said he wants to support nations fighting Islamic extremism. Trump also wants to increase U.S. manufacturing and create well-paid jobs for Americans. The aircraft he plans to sell Nigeria is made in Jacksonville, Florida. After Congress is officially informed of the sale, lawmakers have 30 days to reject the deal. However, a rejection is not likely. Many U.S. lawmakers support the sale, even if they are uncomfortable with the actions of the Nigerian military. Senator Ben Cardin said this week that he is not trying to block the deal, but, he added, there is progress that needs to be made in protecting the civilian population. I'm Phil Dierking.
Harry is a vehicle called a pod. In other words, something like a car. But Harry has no steering wheel or brake pedal. Harry does not even have a driver. Yet Harry is carrying passengers around London for the next few weeks. Harry is part of an experiment called Gateway that is testing how people react to driverless vehicles. The name Gateway is short for Greenwich Automated Transport Environment. The experiment aims to help cities prepare for the future of transportation. The Gateway experiment does not test new technology. Instead, it tests the way existing technology can work in society. The pod operates in an area of London called Greenwich, home to time and navigation museums. Other places where pods will be tested are Coventry, Milton, Keynes, and Bristol. The pods navigate using sensors and a 3D map of the area. A safety operator rides along to take control in case of an emergency. Gateway is intended to see how pedestrians and cyclists may adapt to driverless vehicles. Harry holds up to 4 people, 3 passengers and a safety operator, and can travel at speeds up to 16 kilometers per hour. It is being tested in Greenwich on pedestrian paths, but not on roads with other vehicles. Other planned trials include pods delivering packages and pods being used on roads with other vehicles. If you are in Greenwich during the next few weeks, you may see Harry, but you cannot ride in it during the trial. Over 5,000 people applied to be a passenger in Harry, but only about 100 were chosen. You can, however, ride in a similar pod at Heathrow Airport in London. The Heathrow pods run on tracks, so are not being tested with pedestrians, cyclists, or other drivers. If the trials are successful, the first pods could be operational on the roads of the UK in 2019. You can learn more about the experiment at the Gateway website. There you can add your views about where you would like to see the pod travel and share your thoughts about driverless public transportation. You can also read comments to see what others think of driverless pods. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
The high-speed transportation system called Hyperloop is getting attention all over the world. Last week, groups from the United States presented proposals for Hyperloop projects at a meeting in Washington, D.C. Hyperloop is the name for a transportation system that uses strong magnets to move containers inside tubes. The containers could move both people and goods. The system is the idea of businessman Elon Musk, who created and owns the company SpaceX and the electric car maker Tesla. He wrote a study in 2013 explaining why businesses should consider investing in the project. He said that Hyperloop could move people and goods faster than high-speed trains. In the document, Musk wrote that a transportation system like Hyperloop would be good for travel between big cities less than 1,500 kilometers apart. Greater distances could be traveled more efficiently by fast airplanes. Musk and others think the people movers could reach speeds greater than 1,000 kilometers an hour. That would reduce a trip from Los Angeles to San Francisco to less than 1 hour. It usually takes about 6 hours by car. A company seeking to develop the transportation system is Hyperloop One. It is a separate company from SpaceX. The company has a test track in the state of Nevada near Las Vegas. Hyperloop One launched what it called a global challenge. It looked at proposals from over 2,000 teams in over 100 countries. They all claimed to have the best place for Hyperloop One's first project. Hyperloop One recently announced it had chosen 35 semifinalists. 11 of them were from the United States. Last week in Washington, D.C., Hyperloop One listened to presentations from the 11 U.S.-based semifinalists. Groups from states including Massachusetts, Colorado, Missouri, California, and Texas presented their proposals. The shortest route links Boston, Massachusetts, with Providence, Rhode Island. It is only about 100 kilometers, but it would reduce traffic in a busy part of the U.S. The trip would only take a few minutes. The longest proposed route is over 1,700 kilometers. It would link Houston, Texas, with Cheyenne, Wyoming. Earlier this year, Hyperloop One went to India for a similar event. One of the proposed routes, known as Hyperloop India, would link Mumbai and Chennai. It could cover the distance of over 1,000 kilometers in less than an hour. Another event is planned for April 27th in London. The remaining semifinalists will also show off their plans. Those include projects in Europe, Canada, Africa, the Middle East, and South America. Later this year, Hyperloop One will choose three finalists it will consider for the high-speed transit project. Hyperloop One Vice President Nick Earle attended the event in Washington, D.C. According to a local radio station, he proposed that someday Hyperloop riders could go to dinner in a place 1,000 kilometers away and come home the same night. Anthony Fox was the U.S. Secretary of Transportation during the second term of Barack Obama's presidency. Fox attended the event in Washington, D.C., and said it would be a good idea for organizations like Hyperloop One to prove that their system could work transporting goods before taking risks with people. Hyperloop One also announced last November that it made a deal with Dubai in the United Arab Emirates to study a link with Abu Dhabi. During the announcement, Hyperloop One chief executive Rob Lloyd said, "In the Emirates, we believe everything is possible." I'm Dan Friedel.
You have been listening to VOA Learning English. Up next, Brian Lynn will tell us what's trending today. After What's Trending, Marcia James will have our People in America report.
This is what's trending today. Britain's star DJ Paul Oakenfold traveled to the base of Mount Everest to perform at the highest party on Earth. Oakenfold traveled for 10 days to reach the location just below Mount Everest, the world's highest mountain. The base camp sits at 5,380 meters, while Mount Everest's peak reaches 8,848 meters. The 53-year-old dance music pioneer mixed his set on a stone stage in the middle of the Himalayan mountain range in Nepal. "I'm not going to pretend it was easy to get here, but it has been a wonderful trek," he told the French press agency AFP by phone. "If you could see the view I'm looking at, it is very inspiring." More than 100 people withstood thin air and freezing temperatures to attend the event. Video showed fans wearing heavy winter clothing and hiking equipment as they moved to the music in the middle of snowy mountains. Parts of the event were streamed live on Facebook. Oakenfold called his mountain party truly amazing.
I feel very lucky to have played here. We did a wonderful event and had people from all over the world. I feel very blessed, he told AFP. The Grammy-nominated DJ and producer said that on the way up, he tried to spend time with local people and explored Nepali music. He donated the equipment used to the local community. Money raised by the performance will also be donated to two organizations to help survivors of Nepal's 2015 earthquake, the Himalayan Trust and Supporting Nepal's Children. The earthquake killed about 9,000 people and left thousands homeless. Oakenfold, who has teamed up in the past with Madonna and the rock group U2, admitted the setting was very different from his usual performances at top world dance clubs. The event is expected to result in a new album and documentary about his musical mountain trek. The highest party on earth comes just before the busiest part of the climbing season. Hundreds of climbers will spend weeks at the base camp before attempting to reach the top of Mount Everest. And that's what's trending today. I'm Brian Lynn.
Tim Ma's parents came to the United States from Taiwan in the 1970s. They opened a restaurant. It was not a success. They found success in America, however, in computers and engineering. In part because of their own experiences, Ma's parents hoped he would study to become an engineer or doctor. They wanted financial security for their child. Ma grew up in the southern U.S. state of Arkansas. He says the American South was a challenging place to live for a Chinese-American kid in the 1970s and 80s.
There was definitely some racism there. I came up through a very non-equal, very non-Asian environment. The few things I remember, and one of the more clear things I remember, is waking up in the middle of the night because someone had thrown a brick through me and my sister's window. I was, you know, kind of the dopey Asian kid, and I sometimes would be not punished for that, but I would be bullied for that.
Growing up, Ma considered many professions: writer, fireman, even president. But he had a sense early on.
I didn't want to be an engineer.
Ma did well in math and science classes in high school, and he ended up choosing to study electrical engineering in college. Several engineering jobs later, though, Ma had a change of heart. He wanted to leave the engineering world behind and enter the restaurant business. It was in his blood. After all, his parents had owned a Chinese restaurant in Arkansas. His uncle also owned one in New York. Ma has a clear memory of when he decided to open his own restaurant.
I was in Los Angeles eating at just like a simple sushi restaurant and sitting there with my sister and my brother-in-law. It's like, you know, I think I want to like do like Mom and Dad and Uncle Paul, and I want to go and open a restaurant.
His parents, Ma says, could not understand why he would want to leave such a good job to open a restaurant. They had worked long hours, but their own restaurant still failed. They kept asking why. But Ma remained certain. He was going to do things differently than his parents. he was able to learn from their one major mistake as restaurant owners. They knew very little about the art of cooking. He believes the mistake caused the restaurant to fail.
My parents knew nothing about cooking, and they knew nothing about owning a restaurant. And they had this chef that was very, very good, and he was making excellent food. But then the chef started to see a lot of money come in. The chef saw that and was like, okay, well, I'm going to go across the street and open a Chinese restaurant. And it really put my parents in a bad situation.
So at age 30, Ma left engineering and returned to school, cooking school. He wanted to study the fundamentals of cooking so that he could work as a chef in his own restaurant. Ma enrolled at the International Culinary Center in New York. He received training in French cooking.
I got to culinary school with just a little bit of savings in the middle of New York City, not knowing how to hold a knife. I didn't know anything about cooking. Never cooked through my entire life up until this point.
Ma soon learned that he enjoyed cooking. He discovered it was similar to engineering.
Professional cooking is consistency, efficiency, cleanliness. And it's all about the process of things, which, you know, my background in engineering was everything's a process, everything's a theory.
In 2009, Ma opened his first restaurant in Virginia. It is called Maple Avenue. The restaurant serves American cuisine. He set up the place with help from his wife, parents, and friends. He used tables and chairs left behind from the previous owner of the restaurant space. At Maple Avenue, Ma cooked, cleaned the ovens, fixed equipment, and paid bills. He worked long hours, 7 days a week. I don't have a repairman, so I'm the guy. I know way too much about plumbing, equipment repair, he says. His long hours paid off. Ma opened his fourth restaurant last year, Kirasan in Washington, D.C. For Ma, Kirasan is a special name. It comes from his old family name, Kun, and the Chinese words for 1, 2, and 3. The numbers represent his 3 children.
And we just pushed it all together and called it Kirasan.
He mixes his training in French cooking with his Chinese heritage to create new dishes. A popular dish is a seared scallops with coconut risotto and basil ice cream.
We simply wanted to match basil and coconut. And we got to this point where we're like, well, let's just do something off the wall and see what happens. And the response was good.
Kirasan's success is due to the creative menu and food, Ma says. But a lot of it just comes from sheer hard work.
I think in this country, you can create your own success just by working hard, not because you're smarter than anybody, not because you're more creative than anybody, just by working hard. And I think that's why a lot of people end up coming to America.
I'm Marcia James.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.